Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk here on May 15th. It's a beautiful day. It's already like 65 degrees out. I actually have shorts on, and they're shorts, not underwear. Like Theron says, he does his show in underwear when he's at his Blues Compound of Love. I don't want to know. Maybe he does. Maybe he doesn't. I know he wears a red cowboy boots and a bandana, but that's just him. Let's see. We have got some shows we can talk about here, some gun shows and things. We got all sorts of stuff to talk about today. Got a question from a listener that will go into depth, and then a little bit of politics and maybe a little ammo availability and stuff like that. But let's see, we've got, so from a Michigan standpoint, we've only got one gun show, which is the Sheboygan Gun and Knife Show at the Sheboygan Ice Arena. And God, that must be cold. No, they probably put something on top of the ice, I guess. I don't know. Otherwise, that would be pretty cold. I know that second youngest grandson plays hockey, and we go to games up at the Ann Arbor Ice Cube and stuff, and you're sitting in there freezing, okay? So I don't know, that would not be that much fun for a gun show. Let's see, in Ohio, we have the Western Reserve Cutlery Show, which is a gun show, but maybe it must be a knife show too. We've got the Sandusky County Sportsman's Clubhouse, the SCSC2 gun show in Gibbonsburg, Ohio. Mosquito Lake Traders Day at Mecca, Ohio. And Mosquito Lake, now does that sound like a place that, where are you going? Mosquito Lake, make sure you pack a lot of DEET with you. So let's see, verified, the Mansfield Gun Show at the Richland County Fairgrounds in Mansfield, Ohio. We've got, the big St. Charles Gun Show in St. Charles, Missouri at the Olympic Athletic Center, and the verified Springfield Gun Show in Ozark Empire in Springfield. And I want to mention, there aren't any in New York. Now they're just taking away the mask mandates, and now there are no New York gun shows. But they are having some next week, so you can plan ahead. The NEACA Polish Community Center Gun Show and the NYSTA Gun and Sportsman Show in Frankfort, New York. So the other one, the Polish Community Center, is in Albany, New York. So that's next week there. I was looking at some calendars, and I want to invite the Washman Sportsman's Club, our Washtenaw Sportsman's Club guys that call in. They call in sometimes and tell us when they're having rifle shoots and pistol shoots for kids, especially, and events. They've got some things coming up. They've got, actually today, this sounds good, the 3x600 match. So they have a 600-yard range, so that must be something to do related to that. And then they have a 22 rimfire match tomorrow. Now, tomorrow also at Tri-County Sportsman's League here in Saline, we have a pistol caliber carbine and 22 rifle bowling pin shoot. So these bowling pin shoots are cool. I talked about them, and they're starting back up again now that the weather's getting nicer. And that is actually tomorrow and June 13th and July 18th. It's usually like the second Sunday of the month for the pistol caliber carbine ones. And then next week is also just a 22 pistol one. So, or a pistol one, which would include nines and things like that too. So that could be fun too. And it's a lot of fun where they have, you stand 20 yards away from a structure with six bowling pins on it. And, that should be five bowling pins on it, and you shoot until all five bowling pins are knocked down. So and they're red, white, and blue, and sometimes you're not just shooting them straight in a row. You have to shoot them like red, white, blue, or something like that. So you have to be pretty, cognizant of what you're doing. It's a lot of fun. I do want to mention something. You may have heard Theron talk about this week. I didn't know about it until this week. And unfortunately, I've got some other place or something I've got to do today. I got grandsons coming over and granddaughter coming over. And today is the Second Amendment Day, and it is out in Fowlerville. Now, you've heard Theron talk about this the last couple of days, and there's going to be a fun day from 1 p.m. until 7 p.m. tonight, and Theron is their guest speaker, which I'm sure they wanted to have a good firecracker of a speaker, and so Theron is that guy. And so he's there. Let's see, Mike Murphy, the sheriff of Livingston County, will be there. Wes Nakagiri is going to be there. A whole bunch of people, actually. I got an email from Greg, who is the active in the Michigan Open Carry Group, and he sent me like a PDF of it. It says, spend a day with Second Amendment patriots and learn how you can play a role in maintaining your Second Amendment rights. Going to have a 50-50 raffle and food and a lot of info. And so it should be fun. It should be a fun day. So if you're looking for something, that is 601 North Grand Street in Fowlerville, Michigan, 48836. Okay. Let's see. We've got 743,598 CPLs. And again, 743,572 expired. So we're about half and half with expired. So, but we keep going up, and eventually that number, that expired number's got to come down too, probably. So at any rate, let's see. Here's something I ran across, and I did not see it yet, but I'm going to do a free trial membership, or maybe I can find it on Fox News or something like that. But Tucker Carlson, and y'all know who Tucker is. He does the show on Fox News in the evenings, and he is like, a real straight shooter, no pun intended. Okay, so he does a series of videos where he does investigating things in depth. And he does one called Tucker Carlson Originals AR-15 Under Assault. And it's half an hour, 15 minutes, something like that. But he actually goes and he spends some time with a guy, his name is Gene Tinman, I think. And we know him as Hickok 45. Now, if you ever watch YouTube, and you watch his videos, Hickok 45 has a neat old range set up. And he's actually like a history teacher or something like that. I mean, he looks like he's like I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, just an all walks of life kind of guy. He's looks like an average guy, and he's really into guns. And he will shoot pistols and rifles and stuff. So Tucker Carlson went to talk to him about shooting AR-15s, and they do some shooting and stuff like that. Then he also goes out and, when they say that people don't use these things for hunting, he goes out and talks to some ranchers and farmers who use them for varmint control and stuff. It sounds pretty interesting. And I have not had a chance to look at it yet. I watched a trailer for it, a 1 minute trailer for it, and it sounds great. So Tucker Carlson Originals, and you don't have to subscribe, but you can sign up for like a quote free trial to be able to listen to it. There might be another way to see it. I want to say if you maybe there's a Fox News channel on Roku or something like that that might carry it as well. But at any rate, Tucker Carlson Originals, and I'm sure he gave the story its best face. And I did the part of it. What I saw is it was talking about how, these are semi-automatic rifles that have been around in one form or another for well over 100 years. Okay. These aren't something new. They're not a weapons of war kind of thing. It's a semi-automatic rifle. I have some that are from the 20s. Okay. So, I want to say that, they use terms when they're doing the scary stuff like weapons of war and, assault weapons and Ghost guns, that's another one, actually. And there's some stories about that today, too, where there's a lot of people kind of debunking. There was a woman who actually testified before Congress, and she was the former historian at the Cody Firearms Museum and a historian at the Smithsonian Arms Museum and stuff like that, and she debunked everything. So it's really interesting. Let's see. Remington Factory is making guns again. Remington Machinery is humming again in Ilion, New York, as Remington Arms is beginning to make the iconic Model 870 shotgun again under new ownership by the Roundhill Group. So that's good. They have brought the factory back to life. 230 employees. They're planning to stabilize over the next few months and reassess any other upgrades they have to make to the equipment and things like that. Vista Outdoors, which acquired Remington Ammunition, is announced last month that they're back making ammunition again, which should be good. And then, of course, Marlin Arms was acquired by Sturm Ruger, and Bushmaster was acquired by Franklin Armory. So all of them are getting back into the guns and ammo manufacturing, okay? Let's see. I had a email, and I thought this is worth talking about. This is listener Bob, and I want to say I did a bit several months ago on barrel twists. Okay, and most people think of the rifling in a barrel. They just think rifling. They don't think about the twist rate. Okay. And even people that think about twist rate, they tend to think about twist rate as it relates to rifles, which is where it's really, really, really super important. Okay. Because it is very important to have the correct twist rate. Try to say that. Twist rate, okay, to be able to properly stabilize the weight of the bullet that you're shooting. Like, for example, let's pick a common one, 223 or 5.56, okay? Quite frequently, the AR-15s that you go out and you purchase will have a 1 in 7, 1 in 8, maybe a 1 in 9 twist rate. Now, back when they first started making these things, it was not unusual for them to have a 1 in 12 twist rate. Now, what does that twist rate mean? Now, I'm going to talk about it as it relates to this email I got from listener Bob. He was talking about pistols, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But the same general thing applies to pistols or rifles. And that is, when somebody says, I have a 1 in 7 twist rate, what does that mean? Does that mean 7 twists for every? What does that mean? I don't get it. So what it is that on a barrel, imagine I'm holding my hands out like I'm imagining a barrel, okay? And it takes a certain amount of travel to complete a complete 360 degree twist of the bullet as it travels down it. So it starts to twist, and then if it is a 1 in 7, it takes 7 inches of barrel travel to equal one complete revolution of the projectile. Okay. Or a 1 in 8, it would take 8 inches. Or 1 in 12, it would take 12 whole inches, almost twice as far as the 1 in 7. And so what happens is that if you are trying to launch a projectile down a rifle barrel, and let's say you've got a 55 grain bullet, okay, on a 223, then a 1 in 7, 1 in 8, 1 in 9 is a very adequate twist rate to stabilize the bullet. Because what happens is, think of, you know, I always think of it like a football, right? When you throw a football, when a good quarterback throws a football, I'm not talking Colin Kaepernick here, okay? When a good quarterback throws a football, it spirals, and that stabilizes the football. And you watch it, and it just goes, oh, perfectly straight. It's spinning. You can see the seams on the ball turning and stuff, and it stabilizes it for the football. Okay, well, what stabilizes a 55 grain bullet would not stabilize a heavier bullet that might be longer and heavier, have greater sectional density. It's essentially, if it's heavier, it needs to spin faster to be able to stabilize it. And the stability is what gives it its accuracy, okay? Well, let's say you're shooting a 40-grain, thin-walled varmint rifle or varmint projectile that's going to, you know, thin-walled so that when it hits the fox or the groundhog or something, that it tends to expand easier, okay, because it's hitting a light object, okay? Well, if you try to spin a light-walled, thin-walled light bullet too fast, it'll actually start to come apart. It'll shed some of its copper plating, okay? So it's jacketing and stuff. So you tailor the barrel that you have and the ammunition to the barrel. It's easier to tailor the ammunition to the barrel because you just buy what works with your barrel. But you should make sure that you have a barrel that is of a proper twist for what you're going to shoot. If you're only going to be shooting these varmint rifles at long ranges with really light bullets, then you might want a 1-in-12 barrel, okay? But if you're going to be shooting heavier grains, like 62-grain M855s or maybe 77-grain match bullets and stuff, you need to have more twists to be able to stabilize that bullet. Now, that's in rifles. And it makes, we talked 5.56 there, but the same is very true for 308s and 300 blackouts and 7mm Remington mags and all of these things. There is an optimum barrel twist rate for the weight of the bullet. And I want to say that varies tremendously on some calibers. If you're shooting a 30-06, you might be shooting a 150-grain or 180-grain bullet, okay? But if you're shooting like a 7mm Remington mag or something, you might shoot down to a 120-grain bullet or all the way up to a 180-grain bullet. So a huge difference in weight. So you really need to be thinking about your barrel twist when you select your ammunition. But what about pistols? And that's what listener Bob asked about. He said, I've been looking at the Ruger Match Champion GP100 and SP101 series revolvers, which, by the way, I love Ruger revolvers, and I love the SP101, and I also like the GP100. I don't have a GP100, but they are making a bunch of them in really nice performance models and match grade models and things like that. So he says one has a 1-in-18 twist and the other had a 1-in-16 twist. Does more twist mean more accuracy? Well, remember, more twist is the smaller number because more twist is how many inches it travels to go a complete revolution. And actually, think about this. If you're shooting a 1-in-18 or 1-in-18 twist barrel, and it's only a 6-inch barrel, it only actually has a third of a twist that it in that whole barrel length, okay? So I want to say, in when it comes to pistols, you have to consider, and matter of fact, think of that even with a 1-in-18 twist or a 1-in-16 twist with that Ruger SP-101 with a 2-inch barrel, okay? 2-and-a-quarter-inch barrel. you don't have very much. When you actually look down the barrel of one of those, you don't see much twist. It's got a little bit, but it's because there's the barrel's only 2 1/4 inches long. So actually, in those cases, it's better to have a little more twist, being a faster twist, so that it's the barrel can impart that twist on it as it starts to go down the rifling. Now, is there a general number? I got to say, almost all of the Ruger pistols, and that's the ones when from their performance group, their custom shops, their standard ones, almost all of them are 1 in 16. Now, I did notice that the 1 in 18 ones were special ones, like where they are a special run made for a certain manufacturer, I think like Talos or different companies. They ask for special barrels and things. They might be figuring that, oh, well, if somebody's going to be shooting in a match, they might be shooting wad cutter bullets. Well, we didn't talk about that. What does that have to do with it? Well, the bullets that you shoot can also be affected by the rifling. Sometimes you want to have more aggressive rifling in a, or, you know, faster twist on something with a hard case and a little bit, you know, like a full metal jacket or a jacketed hollow point or something. But if you're shooting wad cutters, like soft lead rounds and stuff, you might have less of a twist in it. So that might be what they were thinking on that that Ruger Match Champion series that has the 1 in 18 twist. I can tell you, for example, now, normally a lighter bullet would take a slower twist, but that's not the case on some guns, and it depends on what round you're shooting, too. For example, a Glock has a 1 in 9.875 twist. So 1 in 9 8/7 of an inch, it goes around once for 9 millimeters. But if you buy a Glock and it's a 45 caliber, like a 45 ACP or a 45 GAP, Glock automatic pistol, it's a 1 in 15 twist. Now, why would that be? Well, because they're shooting a heavier bullet. Gosh, that doesn't seem right, but it's also much slower. It's only 800 feet per second instead of like 1,200 for the 9 millimeter. So it's a whole lot of mix and match. I can tell you that for the most part, revolvers have between a 1 in 10 and a 1 in 20 rate of twist. And I want to say the actual one that you end up with is kind of like the personal preference of the manufacturer that makes it. So, Bob, I hope that helps you. Oh, you also asked another question. They also speak of polished and optimized internals. What does that really mean? That means that all the parts in the inside, that when you pull the trigger and the trigger moves on the sear and stuff, all of those parts that are touching each other have been polished super smooth, okay? So it makes for a much smoother and usually lighter trigger pull than on a standard gun. Because in the standard gun, they just machine them to the normal standards and put the gun together and shoot it. But in a like a custom shop or a match one where they're trying to have a really smooth trigger or really smooth pull, they will polish those surfaces that rub in there. Think of it like this. If you have two pieces of metal and you got oil in between them and you're rubbing them, it may feel a little gritty and stuff as they're running across each other. Imagine those two pieces are polished like glass, okay? And you have oil between it and it's just smooth as glass. Like that's where that saying comes from, okay? Smooth as glass. And it is worth it to have polished and optimized internals. I can tell you that that's one of the things I do on triggers, especially on my revolvers. I will polish the triggers, and that's one of the things that you usually get when you get a trigger job. So, and actually, they call it an Italian trigger job when you've pulled the trigger like 10,000 times and it's worn it so smooth that it's like glass. So, at any rate, that's pretty much to answer your question there, Bob. If anybody's got anything to add to twist rates on pistols, maybe it would be more important in like a twist rate on a on a Thompson contender that's a match pistol or something. We'll talk about that in the second half of the show. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. We'll be right back.
Wham! Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And let's see, the couple of bits of news. Troy Industries, which is a company that makes like forearms and forestocks and stuff for AR-15s and magazines and a lot of other things, announced they're leaving their Springfield, Massachusetts home for a new facility in Clarksville, Tennessee. They made the move to relocate. They're offering 75 new jobs in Montgomery County of Tennessee. The announcement comes just weeks after state lawmakers introduced legislation to ban Massachusetts-based gun makers from manufacturing modern sporting rifles for private sales. So, see? Okay. The fact is that Massachusetts doesn't want their business anymore, so they packed up and they moved to Tennessee. By the way, so did California-based The Glock Store, or GS, they call it. It shuttered its San Diego location and opened a new facility in Nashville. Owner Larry McGill moved because he thinks taxes and regulations are just crazy in California, and now the new place in Tennessee is like a dream come true. So, again, these places pack up and they go to where they are wanted, where there are people that like guns, people that buy guns, and people that like to work on guns, okay? So, and they don't tax the heck out of them, okay? He said, Tennessee's already home to Barrett Firearms in Murfreesboro, which I have had the pleasure of touring that plant and firing in their test cell and stuff like that. And also, Beretta has a manufacturing facility in Gallatin, Tennessee. So there's a lot of people that have moved to, you know, South Carolina, North Carolina, places like that. Let's see, a New York bill would bypass the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act and allow gun makers to be sued for gun violence. So here they have we have a federal bill that has Protection for Lawful Commerce in Arms Act, and here New York wants to bypass that, okay? And it's actually, he looks just like Kwame Kilpatrick. I wonder if he's actually Kwame Kilpatrick. No, his name's he's New York Senator Zellner. He's continued his agenda as New York City has seen, he's very anti-gun, has seen increased in gun violence, including shooting in Times Squares that left three innocent bystanders with injuries. So now what he's saying is there is an illegal trafficking pipeline that has gone unabated in which the gun industry has done nothing to help stem. Well, if the company sells the gun to a law-abiding citizen, hate that term, but law-abiding citizen, okay, and it's stolen, and then it's sold to somebody in New York, and they what do you expect the firearms manufacturer to do about it? Say, you know, this bill is saying we are no longer going to tolerate you having a business model that allows you to profit off the death of people here in this state. So you think that the gun manufacturer, this is people, you know, it's the victimhood mentality and stuff like that. But do you think that the gun manufacturer is selling their gun and part of their business model is that somebody's going to steal it and then shoot people to death in New York Times Square? Well, that seems pretty, by the way, what could possibly be part of the business model and what could they profit off of that? Okay, because actually it's people like you, idiot, New York State Senator Zellner, who are out there causing people to be, when they sue a gun, let's say it's a Glock, okay, and a guy steals a Glock and shoots somebody with it. And then some idiot like you is going to have a bill that says, oh, well, we can hold the manufacturer responsible. So the gun manufacturer is going to have to defend themselves. They'll be deposed. They'll have to have representation in court. They will spend, you know, 1,000 times what the profit is that they made on that gun in that one case. Oh, wait a minute. That's the plan. You just want to bankrupt these companies so that they don't make, they're not in business to make guns anymore. That makes sense. Okay. We got Tom from Detroit on the line about a comment about taxing guns. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi. Hello. Fine. How about you? Are you okay?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm doing great.
Great. Hey, you know, I was just looking at, I was looking for some other stuff. I was looking at some old, Supreme Court cases I was, you know, I use from time to time. You know, talking about taxing, this one was from Flint versus Stone Tracy, 220 U.S. 107. It's on page 168. Basically, the court in there is they're quoting Chief Justice Marshall and McCulloch versus Maryland. You know, it's pretty famous. The words that the power to tax involves the power to destroy. You know, and they go on to say that, well, you know, just because people say that this can destroy doesn't mean it's illegal. But then they go on to say, but it's, okay, here, I'll just read it. In other words, the power to destroy, which may be the consequence of taxation, is a reason why the right to tax should be confined to subjects which may be lawfully embraced therein. And I'm thinking, like, okay, the power to destroy, how does that equate with the word infringe? I mean, if the government is, how can the government even justify taxing at all on firearms? Actually, because, you know, it's the power to destroy. And actually, in the same section, they talked about, well, you know, sometimes, you know, it might not exactly be legal, but there's really, it's really not going to do any damage. And it might even, you know, have some perceptual advantage.
Well,
but then they go on to say they can't do that because they're a court. They're not a legislative body. I'm just thinking of Biden, you know, if he, like, tries taxing my firearms, you know, that, I mean, that's, for one thing, and it'd be a direct tax on a portion, direct tax on my property. And the other thing is, it's an infringement.
Well, absolutely, although they don't see it as such. I mean, they see taxation as a benefit. By the way, you're a gun owner. Don't you just want to pay your fair share?
I mean, now, you know what? I do. I want to pay all the taxes that I lawfully owe. I'm not interested at all in paying taxes that aren't legal.
I get it. But they don't see it. It's just like the taxes that, you know, you listen to Jan Psaki and those people when they're talking about the taxes. Well, we're going to increase the taxes on business, okay? But that doesn't mean they'll pass it on to people. They doesn't necessarily mean that they will. They're going to just absorb that and let it hit their bottom line so that they pay their fair share. But they won't pass it on to people. Oh, yeah. So first of all, the guns, if there were taxes on guns, that's why they don't want to tax the gun maker. They want to tax us directly, because the thing is that if you have to pay a tax directly on it, you're going to actually sit there and say, oh, well, gosh, do I want to pay $200 a year for this thing, or $5 a year, or, you know, whatever? Am I getting $50 worth of benefit out of this? As opposed to, well, if you paid $50 more for that gun when you bought it, and hidden in the base price of the gun, you don't think of it as a tax. And that's exactly what's going to happen with gasoline, with automobiles, with everything, is that the taxes that they do at the corporate level and stuff, and at the income level and things like that, they get buried, and people don't see what they're actually taxing you.
Yeah, and law-abiding citizens who live in high crime areas, you know, they aren't living there because they have a lot of money and they like to be around a lot of crime, you know, and they want to go out and they want to purchase a firearm for their own security, or the security of the state. And then, you know, the you know, the vile Democrats want to, you know, want to tax them out of it.
I there is no rhyme or reason to it. We all know that it's so that they, you know, I saw a meme that made me laugh, and it showed essentially the idea is that the same thing with all the illegal voters coming in. They want to be able to entice the legal voters in with, you know, welfare benefits and welfare or all sorts of benefits and free this and free that and stuff like that, because what they actually see them coming in as are voters, not illegal immigrants that we just need to help. They see them coming in as Democrat voters. And I saw a meme that said it was of Obama, and it had to do with the thing where they said, you know, the illegal aliens, they just do the jobs that Americans won't do. And what is it that Americans won't do? They won't vote for Democratic policies. So they need to bring in new Democratic voters. So,
And unfortunately, I don't think, you know, the majority of the people really know a lot about policies.
Yep. Yeah. So, well, Tom, thanks for your comments today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, appreciate you listening. Let's see. There's an economic study that concludes that there's no evidence that gun buybacks reduce gun violence. Very interesting. I think we all know that. And this was actually a great story. It was sometime before Christmas in 2018. This woman named Darlene, she came and she voluntarily turned in her 9mm pistol to the Baltimore Police Department. And it was just one of 500 guns that they got that day, and they had paid everybody between $25 and $500 for the firearms and high-capacity magazines and stuff like that. And she actually, they asked her, why did you bring in your gun today? And she said to a local TV reporter, I'm turning in the 9mm. I'm hoping to upgrade to a better weapon. Yes, I could see that. So let's say you bring in a crappy old gun and you get, you know, an extra $150 for that. And then you can add that to some more money and get a better gun. Okay. And the reporter said, like what? She goes, oh, I don't know. I haven't quite decided yet. Okay. So you get these people that are turning in their guns for a Target card or for cash or something like that. And by the way, of interest is that, let's see, there's so many things about it. There's like the first U.S. Gun buyback occurred in Baltimore in 1974, and citizens were paid $50 a piece for guns, any firearms, which is $259 in today's dollars. Okay, and it cost the city collected 13,000 guns, and it cost $660,000, okay? But it had no effect whatsoever on gun crime and violence and stuff like that, because it was people bringing in, oh, grandpa's old gun that was in the closet and, you know, some old antique or rusty thing or something like that. And there actually was a guy that was, he's a YouTube guy, and he calls himself Royal Nunsuch, but he actually made $300. He took some pipes and welded handles on them and put, you know, little nubs on them like a sight. And he takes them in, and he got, you know, $150 a piece for these things. And he said it was the crappiest gun you could ever imagine, and they didn't even work. But they gave him, you know, no questions asked. They gave him money for it, okay? And then in Baltimore, they found out during a 2018 gun buyback that they were offering people $25 for every high-capacity magazine they turned in. But a quick online search revealed that some magazines could be purchased for $11 to $13, and they turned them in and forgot $25 for them. And I got to say, that's a pretty entrepreneurial thing. I think I might do that. I probably have some old crappy magazines. If they gave me $25 for them, I could turn them in and buy some good P mags for them or something. Oh, it's funny. Let's see. And then there was a story this week that the one of the you know, everybody, I think we all, I know that when I think gun control, I look to Alyssa Milano and Gabby Gifford and her husband, Mark Kelly, who he's, by the way, he's a retired astronaut, if you didn't know that. So he must be smart. He's, I guess, you know, it's just like when it comes to the policing, I look to LeBron James for advice on policing. But they said, we all look to our people in the movies as our sources for this stuff, right? So they actually said, you know, one of the things that they could do to fix these all this gun violence and stuff like that is let's not have any more guns in movies. Oh, okay. Yeah, let's not have any more guns in James Bond movies or in all of these bang, bang, shoot 'em up. Well, I guess you could hold your finger gun out and go pew, 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 like that. I want to say, we grew up with watching things like, and by the way, I watch it every day now. I watch Gunsmoke, okay? Now, Gunsmoke, he has a lot of, you know, good qualities, Matt Dillon does, and he's quite frequently telling people, you know, like a young guy was just trying to buy a gun the other day and he convinced him he didn't need it and stuff like that. So, okay, but he used the gun when he needed to. We all loved Marshall Dillon. I get a kick out of watching Chester ride that horse with his legs straight out all the time. But, you know, we all watch these shows, these movies, these old Westerns, the war movies, Combat, Rat Patrol, all of these things. And not one of us, not anybody that I know, okay, and not anybody that, and I want to say, oh, gosh, was there a kid that watched Combat that went out and fired a gun and accidentally hit somebody? Maybe, okay. But you didn't have the proliferation of gun violence that you have nowadays in all of the neighborhoods and the gangs and drug gangs and stuff like that. It's not the television and the guns on TV. Of course, they were portrayed a little bit differently than they are today. Okay. But still, if you take the portrayal of guns out of TV shows or TV movies, it's not going to change anything. So I do want to remind folks, again, let me back up to the address. Let's see. We've got Ed from Ypsilanti is on the phone with a comment about TV shows with guns. Hi, Ed. How are you?
Hey, Dick. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you from what you were going to say.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
So, yeah, I don't know if you watch Gutfeld at all, the Gutfeld show.
Is that his new show? I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, I used to watch his old one. I DVR the new one. But on the old one that was on Saturday nights, it's just like must-watch TV. Some of the most hilarious stuff you could imagine. But they were showing the new woke James Bond, and it was hilarious. They had this guy playing the British agent. He's up against the bad guy, and he's, you know, goes to the bar, and he's ordering a smoothie, shaken, not stirred. And he confronts the bad guy. He's got this detonator in his hand. He's going to blow up this building. He's confronting the bad guy, and he says, "Please don't." It's hilarious. He doesn't have a gun.
Oh, gosh. Do you know, I just heard, speaking of Gutfeld show, I just heard on the, I listened to the guy who's going to take Rush Limbaugh's show, Dan Bongino.
Dan Bongino.
Yeah, and he's taking over that slot on 10 o'clock on Saturday night. So, yeah, I heard
I'm
that.
I'm concerned. I listen to his podcast almost daily. Yeah. I'm just concerned that guy is going to burn out on media exposure, you know? He shows up on Hannity. He's going to get his own show. He's going to take a three-hour daily show.
Yeah, but he's fun to listen to.
I don't know how he's doing
to.
On his cancer treatments either. I missed if he's cured now, but I didn't think he would be.
Yeah, no, he's. I heard that this week because I was listening to his podcast too. So, but no, I'm going to have to watch Gutfeld. I like him, and I watched him when he was on part of that show with the five of them or something like
right,
that.
Right, the five. Yeah, yeah. There's another guy gets around.
Yeah, well, he gets around quite a bit. My wife doesn't like him. I think he's just quirky enough that I like him. You know what I mean?
That's my wife thing. Puts up with him. The guests are great. So, you were talking Gunsmoke. And I'm thinking The Rifleman. And I'd been watching, till I got rid of Amazon, I'd been watching the reruns of The Rifleman, which I really came to appreciate in a way, much more than when I was a kid. And I don't know if you know that the early episodes of The Rifleman were directed by Sam Peckinpah.
Really? I did not notice that. I'll have
to look. I mean, we're talking really quality work here. And you know, he got kicked off the air because I remember reading Mad Magazine when I was a kid and seeing the episodes with, you know, the parody of The Rifleman and about all the bodies stacking up. And there was a lot of criticism for the violence in the show back then. But when I watch it, it's like he's doing everything he can to avoid the violent confrontation. Yeah. Everything. Yeah. And he's raising his son, who was played by Johnny Crawford, who just died a week ago.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, and I mean... And then they were reading scripture on TV on the Corral post. I copied that and put it on YouTube. I was blown away. That's what we're missing today, buddy.
Yep. I heard when Johnny Crawford, there was a story about him that he said when he first showed up on that show, he was very, very, very polite and everything. And he said, called everybody sir and ma'am. And 5 years later, when the show was done, and he was a star at that point and had been recording music and stuff like that. He walked around, thanked everybody on the set, called everybody sir and ma'am. I mean, it was a different time. It's very, very impressive.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'll talk to you later. Have a good show.
Okay. See you, Ed. I do want to remind everybody about today being the Second Amendment Day, and it is a big get together today from 1 till 7 p.m. And it is at 601 North Grand Street in Fowlerville, Michigan, 48836. And that our very own Theron X is going to be there as the guest speaker tonight. So he says, I think he's going to speak between 6 or 7. They got food. They've got all sorts of things that you can learn about how you can make a difference in supporting the Second Amendment. So do not forget about that. Okay. Let's see. What else was I going to talk about? There was New York. Wait a minute. Kind of wiggle my mouse a little bit. Like Theron says, just wiggle it enough to... Nope, that's about it that I had. So I'm hoping that that everybody gets a chance to get out. And now that we finally had some good weather, and it looks like it's going to be in the 70s the rest of the week. And so it's time... Actually, I got to go out and take down the Visqueen around our pistol range out at Tri-County Sportsman's League. That we put up in the winter to help a little bit with the wind and the chill and stuff. But get out and take somebody to the range. I was talking to a neighbor. He came over. He was so proud. This is my new neighbor who had bought. I told him, you know, about guns and showed him a bunch. And I said, well, for your first gun, this is what you want. And he bought it. It was a Glock 19. And I called it his first gun. Well, a week later, he came back with a Smith & Wesson M&P EZ, but no ammo. So I took him to the range, and I used a couple hundred rounds of my ammo. And he came over this week to tell me he is so excited. I found 2 boxes of ammo. Good for you. Good for you. Remember to use the consolidator websites like ammobuy.com. That'll help you find it. You're still going to pay a little more for it, but it is starting to come down a little bit right now. It's, you know, in the, I want to say, I have heard of people finding boxes of 9mm for $25, $29. That still seems ridiculously high, but it is better than it was. So anyway, this is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. Have a great week, and I'll see you next week.